We left off with the wasps. Again, I'm confused. Whether I don't understand or he doesn't understand, but he says the wasp venom is always meant as inflationary, causing blindness. The bottom of 121, third line up from the bottom. I don't know if it's that important, but I just didn't follow it. Because what we were just saying was that the wasp venom is the destructive effect of synchronicity on a rigid consciousness. So who knows?
But he takes it as a different...
He takes it differently. He seems to say that Jung took it that way too, so who knows? The other thing on 122, it seems it's a different interpretation of the stripes. And he talks about how the stripes mean the swing from one extreme to the other, which in a way we've seen. One minute, I don't want to give you a math lesson. Next minute, I hope you fight my intellectualism with your emotion. I don't know what to say. The thing that leads me away from accepting his interpretation here is that he wasn't afraid of those swings. What he was afraid of was synchronicity. So maybe he's right here, or maybe he is trying to avoid the real issue. Who knows? That's just detail stuff. But I think we have talked about the ending of his relationship with Jung, and over the fact that Jung said your scientific dreams have a symbolic meaning. I think we find out now why it upset him. As he observes, here I am there, second full paragraph. As he observes in his letter to von Franz, theoretical physics initially protected him against the danger of psychosis, which is why he attributed a healing function to it. Thus he felt that that is very closely connected with the disagreement concerning the interpretation of mathematical physical symbols of the dreams. These spontaneously emerging symbols also certainly have for me, teleologically speaking, a certain healing function centering. I don't mean the analyst, but Asclepius equals the healing function of the unconscious in contrast to the danger of ecstatic states. So what he's saying there is just doing science heals him, stabilizes him. So that in working with his scientific dreams, literally, he is helping himself heal because science is stabilizing. So that apparently the thought of taking scientific dreams symbolically deprives him of stability.
So science becomes his
thing. Yeah, or like his transitional object, like his teddy bear. And you can't take it away from him, you can't get him to question it, because it's keeping him afloat.
And that's why he won't share those.
Must be the real reason that all this is going on. Which again is so tragic, because he asked his unconscious what's gone wrong, and one of the things that I think we have two answers from the unconscious that have gone wrong, that where science needs to develop. One is in finding a way to eventually I incorporate synchronicity into its worldview. And secondly, that the scientist learns how to work symbolically with all of their dreams, including their scientific dreams. As soon as he gets the answer, he shuts it down because he can't look at science symbolically since it's his lifeboat. And then that's where he and Jung finished. Jung wasn't going to back down. Because my scientific work since puberty, I believe, has had this function and the unconscious now appears to be expanding this. So he wants to see the unconscious is presenting him with scientific dreams as supporting sciences supporting him. That's sad. One thing you'll notice about Jung and von Franz, they didn't back down. I like that about those people. You know, they were willing to fight, stand their ground, and let the chips fall where they may. Well, only in the sense that he's rigidly hanging on to one understanding to give him stability.
Desperately
hanging on. Yeah, I mean, I think he really was in the danger of going off the deep end. Remember when he was talking about reading after the Job, how he got this obsessive idea he couldn't get rid of? Well, that's serious. It's sort of like, I'd be like a Christian, you know, who would feel threatened by your saying, well, take this as a metaphor now. They can't do it because they're invested in what's out there. He's like a fundamentalist scientist, so to speak. And which is, in a way, it's tragic for him, but in a way, I think it's his value for us. And I don't know if I've ever expressed this, it might have stopped me, but if you talk to a lot of scientists, say that guy we had that program with at Spear in Place, they don't have trouble with this. Because for them, science is just a tool. But for Pauli, he was science. He wasn't a person with a life and then went to science as a tool, as many of these people did. And I think that's what keeps them sane. He looked at life totally through the eyes of the scientific paradigm. So he is like the personification of that worldview. So we're seeing the limits of that worldview as a lifestyle. And most scientists would say, well, that's not my lifestyle. And good for them, but it was his lifestyle, and it's showing us what is limited about it as a worldview. That, to me, is the tragedy and the beauty of Pauli. That he embodies totally the world that he created. If science can't admit it, then it doesn't exist. And then other scientists would say to you, well, so what? I mean, we know it is. But Pauli was saying, and I think Jung was saying, what would science look like if it was a worldview that could give room for everything? So you didn't have your science here and your religion here, or your science here and your relationship here. That you had one unified point of view. I don't know if we'll ever get there or not, but it just shows you in his life what is lacking in the system.
Because he even makes a statement about my entire scientific work since puberty.
Right. I think you could say my entire life since puberty has been science.
Okay, the feeling I get is I'm so curious. He keeps talking about psychosis, but I sense it as a death fear, which is sort of the ultimate fear. And I thought that when I was reading about the wasp phobia. Typically, a phobia comes because you fear you're going to die. That's the ultimate fear, is that you're going to die. And my sense that he has is so extreme because the ultimate thing that's going to happen. Now, whether it's a physical death or a psychic death, if he has to give up his science, his way of looking at the world scientifically, what you're asking him to do is to die. And that's what he simply, it's so in him, he can't release from that, and it's the ultimate fear. So, if that's where he's coming from,
it,
I mean, it's a huge awakening he has to undergo.
Well, I think it's more than that. I think he could literally become psychotic.
And I wonder, too, so he mentions puberty, and, you know, your friend out in California that did work with the schizophrenics who had their first...
colleague.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That worked with these young adolescents with their first break.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if he might not have experience something like that at puberty, and that this was his lesson.
Page 136, footnote 5, after imagination, Paul returns to the magnificency when he was a boy.
Right.
Oh, yes.
That helps, this is what it is. I mean, he's still, his sexual desire was mathematics and physics at the time when he should have been experimenting and growing.
Mm-hmm. Or his, I would say,
never matured.
Relational sexual.
Yeah.
That's when he went to prostitutes, you know, not too long after that. Yeah. In a way, Nancy's point's well taken, that you could say that psychosis is a death. But I think the guy could have gone off the deep end with delusions.
I don't disagree with that at all. I just think that part of it is the ultimate fear of the ultimate outcome, which is death. And his inability to accept a new way of thinking about that and ultimately cause what he was going to
say. Yeah. That's kind of like a vicious circle cycle here.
And he couldn't see that a death was necessary before he could have rebirth.
Right.
He
sure could talk about it. And that, you know, as embodying science wholeheartedly left so little of him satisfied that he had to have a psychosis in him as compensation, that's exactly what's playing out in the world stage. And except that it isn't psychosis, it's war. And so little of us is acknowledged in that prevailing paradigm. So there you can see the parallel, which he couldn't see, but that was his question. Sad.
He wasn't going to take that leap.
He wasn't
going to
take that leap.
I'm not going there, so...
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm brilliant, and I can talk to you all.
Yeah. Right. Now, the blue. Again, it's a detail, but if you're curious to work these puzzles... Remember the dream that he gets, how did that go? He gets, he signs a document given to him by the physicist. It becomes blue, covered with spilled ink. The father says it depends on the details. You will remember these more clearly if the writing isn't all too clear. But under the blue color, the writing is still clearly visible. That's just a puzzle. It's not that critical. But you want to try to solve this little puzzle? I mean, this is professional deformation. I love these sort of puzzles. Well, here's where I really wanted to hear from Carol. His association to the blue was the cornflower. Now, corn in British English doesn't mean our corn. It means grain. And I brought along a picture from, which I actually took at Eleusis. It was one of their main symbols, the grain and the poppy. It's from a lintel that had fallen. And you can pass it around. Are any of the flowers of the wheat or barley or oats blue in springtime?
The rape seed is blue, isn't it?
I have no idea.
What seed?
Rape seed.
Oh,
flower?
The grape seed?
Grape seed flower?
I don't even know what that means. But there is a little flower called a corn flower.
And what is that the flower of?
It's just a flower.
Oh, it's just a flower. And it's not related to grain. That's difficult then to... Pardon?
I love corn flowers. They're beautiful. And they're tiny. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, he's saying that they're sacred to the Eleusinian Mysteries, and that's news to me. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
What I know is the poppy and wheat are sacred. And the lake I made it in British English, wheat is called corn. Wheat, barley, and oats are all called the corn.
I guess that could be a coincidence. They do have a corn flower in the rice, and yet...
They could have. I've never seen it. We wouldn't know about it because it wasn't written down. But that's definitely not a corn flower. I'm pretty sure that's a poppy. Isn't that the shape of a poppy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Corn is also used scientifically here to mean a variety of grains.
Right. That's why I was wondering if any of these grains had a flower before they... seeded that was blue, but apparently not. Well, that excuses my theory. Then.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose it could be ancient grains and grasses that have that blue flower.
As far as I know, the cornflower played a role in cold Demeter. Not that I know of. Sandy, you can just check that. I have never seen that. Now, I have seen them talking about the role of the corn in Eleusinian Mysteries, and that could be why he's getting confused, but that's wheat.
Right. That was my understanding.
Yeah.
Well, Polly would call it corn, too, wouldn't he, if you were writing in English?
This was in German, though.
What was the German word
then? I think corn.
Maybe wheat.
I don't know. Uh-huh. I'll check that. I'm pretty sure. You see, my German's not good enough to know that. I can ask my friends. They might not even know, because it's probably like farmer language that even an urban German speaker might not know. I don't know. I wouldn't know. I don't know. I just don't know. Well, there goes my theory. My theory was that if it was connected to the Eleusinian Mysteries, that it's maternal color. But I don't think I can say that now.
Except that blue is associated with Mary, like the and the mother.
Well, what color is the cornflower? Do you know, light blue or dark blue?
Dark blue.
You know
what? It's like, almost like that blue.
Oh.
Yeah, real vivid.
Well, then that would be, because generally light blue is father, dark blue is mother. Because of the sky, father, and the ocean, mother. So, maybe I'm on the right track then, that, and here, as I say, I'm thinking out loud, so I'm not sure about this. Is the guy right or wrong? That's what we're trying to figure out. Where is that? It depends on the details. You will remember these more easily if the writing isn't all too clear. That puzzled me because you would link up writing and details. But let's say the details refers to emotional details, and writing refers to intellectual details. If the paper is covered in blue, then it's stressing the emotional details to obliterate the intellectual details. So that it should cover the paper, and the problem is that the blue writing is still visible. that he is not able to let go of intellectually dissecting things to feel the emotional reality. Maybe that's what it's about.
And again, it's still playing on that idea of he's still focusing on detail versus the bigger picture, which is all the blue that's covering it, which is the emotions.
Right, which is the emotions.
So then
right.
The tree for the forest.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Still
right.
He's focusing.
And the psyche is trying to bring the maternal in, but it's not able to cover the intellectual. And I think that the reason I'm kind of focusing on this too, more than just a puzzle actually, is that we're going to see this come up in the piano lesson. Because the way the author takes it, and I think he's right, the only earth in Pali's life was through his maternal grandmother. And his maternal grandmother, I think, was the one who played the piano. Or maybe it was his maternal aunt. But that side of the family were related to the Austrian land, while his dad was a cultural Jew who had given up even his Judaism. So his dad was like pure intellect. No tradition. No land. His mother at least had land in her background, meaning a relationship to the earthy and the extinctual and the feeling. That's why I think it's important to build that link.
Well, it's interesting to think about why the cornflower is called cornflower.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the corn.
No.
When you look at the flower itself, so the etymology of that would be interesting.
Could you check that?
Maybe
I was just saying the reason I answered the brown cover, I kind of symbolically, you know. Corn, what the ground gives us, you know, would be the wheat that feeds us, and the ground is the beauty on the ground from the ground. I guess that's what I was saying.
There could have been something that grew along the edge of, you know, the corn.
Mm-hmm. Check that. I'll check. We can all do this. I'll do it. I'll look for.
I don't think it's like a vinca. I think it's tall.
Oh, it's tall.
Yeah.
Because
it comes
from
look at it in bouquets. It's got a long stem.
It's not.
You might have been thinking more like the carrying corn.
Yeah.
That's a puzzle, but it may be. I mean, again, it's. We could let it go, but. I like these things. And it is going to come up in the piano lesson because the piano teacher, I think, is this blue. So it's going to come back.
And chakras, where's blue?
I'll check that. I don't know.
Is it purple, the one up here?
It's throat.
Blue is throat?
Yeah.
And what color is it out of the four thinking, feeling?
I think it's thinking.
Is it thinking?
Yeah, thinking. Green is sensation. Yellow is intuition. Feeling is red.
Yellow is intuition?
Yeah. I mean, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But. Yeah, Harold's right. Pali goes on to some more of his blah blah. By the way, there is a typo top of 123. There is a chronic, should be there is a phonic side of the self to express. That's another typo. It should just be to express it in your language. Pali here is referring to the grandfather on his mother's side, Friedrich Schultz. This branch of the family indeed instilled in the young Wolfgang a certain trust for Mother Earth. The wife of Friedrich Schultz, that would have been his maternal grandmother, was artistically gifted. She was a singer and later honorary member of the KUK, I don't know what that is, court opera in Vienna. must be something like His Majesty's Court Opera in Vienna. She sang and played the piano for the young Wolfie for hours. So, see, we're having the piano lesson, so. As we will soon see, though, such memories from his youth, through such memories from his youth, Pali is nearing the earth he has cast aside. October 14th, he writes, Mary Louise von Franz, your encouragement is very valuable for me. It will very possibly become difficult. And then he starts the piano lesson. Seeking the greater kunyunkyo, which will be science and psychology, rationality and non-rationality, contemporary thought and Mercurius. Okay, move on. What do I do with the outline? Oh, yes. I just outlined it to try to bring some order into it. I think what we're going to do is shuttle back and forth. So you might want to put a bookmark in each section. It was helpful to read it?
Very helpful to read it that
way. Okay. So on one hand, we'll be on page 125. On the other hand, we'll be on page 140. Is that right? Yeah. Something messed up?
I don't know. I just started on 135.
They're the footnotes.
Yeah.
No, but we'll be doing the interpretation, which is on 140.
Oh.
I'll refer to footnotes as we go along. I think we'll probably read this word by word. Is this like a big dream? Part of it, anyway. Some of it we can skip over. Wish I had brought that darn text I could show you, but I'll bring it next time. It's kind of neat to see it. It was a misty day, and I had been seriously troubled for some time. For there were two schools. In the older school, they understood only words, but not meaning. In the modern school, they understood the meaning, but not my words. I could not bring the two together. I thought my last hope was to visit a girl who lives in Kuznacht. The address was Hornweg, it should be two, by the way, typo, was Hornweg 2, simply 2, not the Golden Horn which I visited before. I'm not sure what that Golden Horn is. There was so much about which the girl could not speak. This pleased me much, for it would enable me to imagine what perplexed her in such a way that it could not be very different from my own troubles, and that therefore she would certainly understand me.
That's where I was picking up that whole projection. He has to project.
Yeah. What about her needs and feelings?
I guess that's probably not so far from the feeling of the time.
I don't know, maybe.
Between men and women.
Yeah. Well, she certainly wasn't going to take it. So I arrived at Hornweg to in Küsnacht, and I opened the door. I think we can stop there. So let's go back to the text now, 140. Pauli's Piano Lesson is a completely unique document that shows the way that can lead a modern physicist again to experience the soul of matter. In the Piano Lesson, we encounter archetypal contents that can bridge the rift between physics and depth psychology and that belong to the second and third stage of the alchemical union of opposites. The actual union does not occur, however, but nevertheless, Pauli is taking the most important step. Now, this is what I wanted to focus on in the next paragraph. Seen from the standpoint of alchemy, classical mechanics in the 17th century had undertaken only the first stage of the union of opposites. When it removed the soul from the material world, should be T-H-E-R-E. But there had been no thought of reuniting the spirit with matter, as the attention of the physicist was directed solely toward the dead body and not to the soul thus separated by this operation. This was to Carl Gustav Jung to rediscover, and he called it the collective unconscious. Within him, he found the archetypal images that had originally animated nature as gods, spirits, or nymphs. Let's look at that paragraph. What's so important there, and I think this is what's exciting about this material, it is built on the alchemical paradigm of the Kinyukyo. Should we go through that? You probably know this, so it'll hopefully ring a chord. But depending on how you count, there were four stages in their idea of the Kinyukyo. In the first stage, which is not really the stage, it's just the condition of the material, opposites were united together inside the material in a chaotic, helter-skelter way. That's incest, for example. As they cooked the material, the opposites would separate. And sort of, so to speak, line up on each side of the material. When they cooked further, and so that would be the second stage, separation. The third stage, they reunited in very often a sexual imagery. And a sexual image. And gave birth to a third thing. And when that happened, the material turned into gold. So basically, conglomeration, stage one, stage two, separation, stage three, unity, reunification. And at that stage, the gold was produced.
Third stage.
Mm-hmm. Most of them stopped there. We talked, those of you who did Mysterium, we talked about this guy Gerhard Dorn had a fourth stage, which he thought, it's not really relevant to us exactly, but it might be eventually, a fourth stage where the unified product in the vessel had a, we would say, synchronistic effect in bringing the world into order. That's the unus mundus that we've talked about so much, in number and time and so on. a synchronistic effect. So where some alchemists said the thing was over when the material turned to gold, this other guy and his students would say that that was that was followed by yet another step where that gold turned everything in the world into gold. When the elements in the material were in order, that brought the world into order. And Jung felt that was so important because he took that as a metaphor for synchronicity.
Practically speaking, let's say Polly took on the attitude that, yes, I'm going to accept this isolated job of bringing science into meaning, for symbolic meaning, that I've, and listening to my dark animal. Then the fourth stage would be him going and out lecturing, you know, to the world, right? Doing it. It's not just the attitude alone that...
No, I would say that the third stage would be the lecturing.
Oh, okay.
On the fourth stage is exactly what he couldn't believe in, that will start spreading on its own.
Okay.
In other words, you could say Jung, shall I hold that thought?
Go ahead.
Jung, you know, just sat in Balligan and did his writing. And that would be like the third stage. And what has happened is it has spread. That's the fourth stage. It has spread because it was right, and it has endured because it was right. Where, you know, how many other people have written pop psych books which are popular for 6 months and then... Who's read games people play in the last 30 years? See what I mean? But if you try to write to please the public, you may have a short-term success. But by writing from the inner voice, you have the long-term success, although it's not quite as dramatic. And what Pally didn't believe is that if he wrote this stuff inside his heart, that the world would pick it up in and of itself. I think that's how Jung would take it. But now, the other dimension of that, what this author is talking about, which I think is really kind of exciting, is that the fact that we have had pre-science and the fact that we now have science is an indicator that we are ourselves historically in an alchemical process of transformation. Not just as individuals, but as a society. And so the history of science is part of, as we know it today, is part of that larger process. If you see in an individual that they're in a mess, and then you work and work and work and get them working on their dreams, and you see them getting clarity and these what used to be confusions getting clear, you can bet your bottom dollar that there's going to be yet another phase. That's just the nature of the individual. And what we're working with here is not only is that an intrinsic law of the individual, that's an intrinsic law of human culture per se. So the fact that we have had a conglomeration, the magical thinking of the Middle Ages and an attempt at science in alchemy, and the fact that we've had a separation now, science has separated that mystical side out and only set up a position of clarity vis-a-vis it, means there's going to be a third stage where these things come together. And that's what, in a larger sense, we're working on. What will science look like when it can reintegrate what it once has had to exclude? And it had to exclude it at the time because it was magical thinking. But Jung has discovered the whole world beneath magical thinking, the archetype. So science has clarified one position. Jungian psychology has clarified another position. That's the separatio. That's the second phase of the coniunctio. And as soon as you have a second phase of the coniunctio, you can expect a third phase of the coniunctio, and that's what we're involved with historically. So we're not just spewing off hot air. from within our from our knowledge of the structure of human growth, we can anticipate there will be yet a third phase occurring where what was once considered mystical and what is now considered scientific can reunite because the mystical has been redefined as archetype. That makes sense? So that what Pauli is working on in himself is this historical change, and that's what the piano lesson is about. That's the two schools. So yes, he's working on it in himself, but he's also, as we all are who are trying to work on this, trying to see how can we be part of that next third phase. We're probably not going to accomplish it in our lifetime, but this is our gift to the grandchildren.
And I don't know if it's a coincidence, but just the fact that the address he's at is Hornwood 2.
the duality.
The second.
Yeah, now I've got to check. She must have moved. Hornweg is where the institute is in Kuznacht. She lives on Lindenstrasse, which is, Kuznacht's on a little hill, and it's on the lake, of course. And the street that goes along the lake is called Hornweg, and it's where the Jung Institute is. They've had a big split, so it's the old institute now, there's a new one. But the old one's still hobbling along, and it's right on the lake. I mean, it's gorgeous. And Jung lived right on that street. I think the street stopped before it got to his house, because his land went up a little bit, but this is right on the lake. Whether that two, I mean, two probably was her address. Be curious next time I go back to see where Hornweg 2 is. Must be right up the street from the institute. I mean, it's a lovely area. It's really just, you walk this little, it's like a little alley down, and there's trees on either side, the lake on one side, and all these old villas that, I mean, it's, these houses go for like $100 million. I mean, they're just, it's prime real estate. Jung knew what he was buying into. Well, his wife knew what she was buying into. When they bought the Jung Institute 20 years ago, they spent $5 million renovating. That was $5 million, $1980. So give you an idea what, it's just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. Area.
Would a way to think about the science, the scientific and the art kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another way to think of it is logos and mythos.
Yes.
And then what ultimately the gold is eros.
Could say, yes.
It's kind of an interesting
yes, thing that's a nice way to put it.
Because eros would be that creative life form.
Yeah.
That fully thrives in the presence of mythos and logos.
Right.
That drains energy in the absence of either one.
Right. Yeah. And what I find so exciting here is that, you know, I'm sure if you talk to most people, they just go, oh, yeah, this is, isn't this an intellectual curiosity? But if you've worked in the psyche at all, you know this is such a strong dynamism. When there's two, everything in that personality works for there to be a third, to be a unity. And this state of science is simply one stage in a larger process of transformation. And we are not nuts to be asking, where is it going? The fact that there was one and that there are now two means there will at some point be a third. Because that's the way we're built. So our world today is definitely a stage in the evolution of consciousness. And that's to be deduced from what we know of the alchemical process of the Kanyukyo. That's, to me, in the very first sentence, and why this stuff is so, even though it's so frustrating sometimes, why it's so important. This is what Pauli had sunk his teeth into. And Jung and von Franz, of course, did too, but they weren't scientists. So he was really, you know, just the perfect person to carry the work on internally. And that's what he's saying there in the second paragraph on 140. He calls it the first stage, I call it the second, because I call the first stage the mixture, but it doesn't matter. So the soul had to be removed from the material world, and now it will not give up until it is reunited. So that's what the piano lesson will be dealing with. Which takes us to the second paragraph on 140 and to the through the second paragraph on 125. Yeah, this is it, right? Their belief is that that is the dynamism you can expect in individuals and in society where you see a separation. And I think it's exciting. And if you read now physics and what the bleep, ask yourself, are they aware of logos and mythos needing to be reunited? I don't think so.
In what the belief, you don't think they're aware of?
I don't think so.
They aren't aware of the separation?
They're aware of the separation. They're not aware that there is a mythos world to be reunited.
What do they think needs to come together that's separated then, if they don't realize it's the world of mythos?
They're taking quantum physics as a final position. As the new mythology, rather than as a step in the evolution of a fuller mythology. Mythology understood in the loosest possible way. Yes, thank you. Okay, well, you see, there's more fun ahead. I think, you know, you might, I gave you up to page whatever, 144. You might read ahead a little bit, another 5 or 10 pages. I don't know how long it'll take us to do this piano lesson. It's not easy stuff. But it's good stuff. Okay, thank you.